Hi, I'm Amanda Maxwell, and welcome to MedTech Insight and to our latest MedTech Regulatory Podcast, where four high-profile experts from the EU MedTech sector are going to discuss a particularly hot topic with me, what the future governance and oversight of the EU MedTech regulatory system is likely to look like, and whether the EU needs a MedTech agency. The number of voices calling for reform of the EU medtech regulatory system is increasing, and so is their sense of urgency. The case for change, including in the governance of the system, appears stronger than ever and is linked to problems associated with the EU's medical device and IVD regulations. It's no secret that the implementation of these strict rules has been beset with delays in the publication of much needed documents such as standards and in setting up structures like the EUDAMED medical device database. These delays have resulted in companies removing large numbers of existing products from the EU market, and manufacturers are choosing to launch innovative products in markets other than the EU in droves. Stakeholders want an end to the cycle of damage to the EU regulatory system, to manufacturers and patients in the EU. And fundamental to that change, many believe, is an overhaul in the governance of this system. So I'd like to invite our esteemed regulatory experts representing industry and notified bodies to talk about how they see governance evolving and whether they believe the EU needs to have a medtech regulatory agency for the first time in its history. I'm delighted to welcome Petra Zollner, Director of Regulatory Affairs, IVDR and MDR at MedTech Europe, Basil Acra, CEO of Acra Team, Olga Van Grol-Lawler, Senior Global Regulatory Intelligence and Advocacy Manager at Boston Scientific, all representing industry, and also representing EU notified bodies, Graham Tunbridge, Senior Vice President, Global Regulatory and Quality at BSI Regulatory Service, and Reut von Hahn, Senior Vice President, Global Medical and Health Service at TÜV SÜD Product Service Division. Thank you all for joining me in this interesting discussion. To kick off, I'd like to ask each of you in turn to tell me how optimistic you are on a scale of 1 to 5 that positive change is on the way in the EU over the next 24 months when it comes to improving the regulatory environment for medtech products, and why, in just one sentence. So if we kick off with industry first, Olga, would you like to go first?
Thanks. Yeah, thanks so much, Amanda, and thanks for having it. So I may well be the outlier here, but I'm going to say I'm incredibly optimistic. I don't think there's anything to be gained by being negative about this. There's a range of initiatives underway with the European Commission and with the study on governance and innovation and, you know, impact analysis as well. So I think it's important that each stakeholder puts their best foot forward and that we try to come up with solutions.
Right. Thank you. Lots of optimism there. How about you, Petra?
So I do agree with you, Olga. Just to be a little different, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 because I think the European Commission and Medical Devices Coordination Group and all stakeholders are working incredibly hard to fix some of the issues that we're seeing. But at the same time, because of the timeline that we're seeing for the targeted evaluation, which we hope will lead to legislation, I don't think we're going to see, for example, an improved governance system in the next 24 months. So I would give it a 5 out of 10. Lots of progress, lots of good procedures put in place to have dialogue and to find solutions. But I think the solutions will be coming after the next 24 months.
Okay, thank you for that. And Basil, what do you think in terms of a time frame?
Yeah, Amanda. So looking actually to what Olga and also was said before, I would actually agree with both of them. But honestly speaking, 24 months, as Petra was mentioning, is not actually something which is achievable. We learned that actually in the past 7 years already that moving in Europe is not that fast. So we will not get things changing from 0 to 100 immediately. We will have changes, yes, we are going in the right direction, but we are not there to say in 24 months everything will be green and everyone will be happy, everyone is holding certificate, notified bodies feels comfortable, authorities are acting harmoniously. I don't believe that.
Okay, right. So quite worrying for the whole sector that making change is going to take so long given the problems that we have. So Royt, from your point of view, working as a notified body, how do you see change and what are you hoping for? How optimistic are you?
Yeah, I would say carefully optimistic with a 6 or 7 on the scale, because we have now experienced how it doesn't work. So if we take all of what we've learned over the last couple of years, then there is a good chance that we make significant improvements. I agree with the timeline, that's critical. And 24 months is probably not realistic to build a complete new governance structure. That, to bridge that gap, that's a challenge. But in the end, I think we have everything at hand to build a good system this time.
Right, thank you. And Graham, also from the point of view of notified bodies?
Yeah, so I'm very optimistic. I'll go back to your scale of out of 5, Amanda, as you asked, and I'll go 4 out of 5 into breaking the rules. You know, we should be surprised. So I think the reason I'm optimistic is because we're seeing lead times in notified bodies come down. We're seeing the number of certificates increase and increase substantially, and the pace is picking up. And we're reaching the end of what I'd describe as the kind of the first phase of transition. As Basil said, yes, it's taken 7 years, but we've kind of broken the back of the recertifying the existing products on the market, and we're now able to take a breath and look forward. So I'm optimistic.
Okay, that's really interesting to hear, because the conversation that I'm hearing in the background all the time is the kind of optimism that you're expressing now, with so many notified bodies having been designated and getting on board. But then I'm also hearing that there's still a lot of products that are being removed from the market, and there are still a lot of problems, which I'm sure Petrol will reflect from that side. So it'd be interesting to see how this discussion goes and what the perception is. So turning to my next question, how important is it in your view that there's a central governance structure to oversee implementation of medtech regulations in the EU, given the current status of the implementation of the MDR and IVDR? And what would the primary roles of such a governance structure be, do you think? Basil, would you like to kick off this time?
Sure, happy to do that, Amanda. I think you mentioned this very well, because you said we need an agency, the need for an agency for overseeing. So very important to state is actually notified bodies are essential for the system, so we need to keep that system. The big challenge that we have currently is actually the various member states' interpretation and expectation, which are leading to unharmonized approach. And I think that agency should make sure that all notified bodies are acting under the same legislative frame. It can't happen to continue as such that we have notified bodies doing for 2A devices 100% reviews, where others are doing sampling. It can't be that notified bodies are looking to clinical studies as one S devices, whereas it's not their obligation to look to that piece even. So this is becoming too critical, because some member states are pushing their notified bodies in the way that they believe this is makes sense. Therefore, such an authority is important for harmonization, for consistency, and for empowering as well the notified body activities. I think this is essential for the future legislative frame in Europe. Keep myself
Graham,
short, because you promised me.
You.
I promised. You asked me to do that, so I'm just keeping short instead of talking
Excellent.
Forever.
Thank you, Basil. Graham, would you like to respond to that and to the need for harmonisation among the activities of notified bodies, not least given, you know, the role of TMB and all the hard work that that organisation is doing to ensure consistency among notified bodies?
Yeah, and Basil makes some good points. It's always tricky, because as individual notified bodies, we take decisions and we operate in a way that is consistent with how we are required to do by our designating authority, which is, in the case of BSI, is in the Netherlands. So that Basil's absolutely right. There is this direct relationship that we have. And to a large extent, the way we operate is dictated by that. We have the joint assessment teams, but they come in and they've done the initial designation. Then it's a 5-year period, essentially, before they come in again. So that drives a degree of harmonization. But over time, there is that drift, and a lot is done with the interpretation of individual authorities. TeamNB can support. Obviously, not all notified bodies are members of TeamNB. We have NBCG Med as well, which is another vehicle to do that. Obviously, in those discussions, we do pick up the differences and we try and kind of pull it together and harmonize where possible. But ultimately, we have to make sure that we're satisfying the needs of our designating authority. They are our masters, if you like. They're in control of our designation, our license to operate. And so that relationship will always be the key one and will always operate in a way. And where there are differences between those authorities, then that is then seen in the way that Basil described.
Right. Royt, would you agree?
Yeah, I think the key is what Basil already mentioned is consistency and predictability in how the requirements are applied. And then you will see that the market mechanisms that are intended for the notified bodies being competitors will be effective again. Because if then a notified body decides to deviate for doing more than what is a minimum requirement, that's fine. I mean, that's something that then the market mechanisms will address. Yeah. With the customer base you get with that approach. And that's exactly what is intended. But in the current state, we have not only different levels of requirements for the notified bodies, but subsequently different requirements for the medical device manufacturers. And that means we have a not even playing field in two markets, the medical device market itself and the notified body market. And with that, these markets cannot function the way they need. And efficiency in both markets, which is basically the basis of total cost in the healthcare system, is key. Yeah. And for that, we need to ensure this level playing field. And if a central agency can support that, if it's built the right way, yes, that would be helpful.
Okay, thank you. So Olga, in your experience, do you use at Boston Scientific, do you use more than one notified body, and do you see differences between notified bodies and how they operate, or even between the auditors that maybe surprise you?
Yeah, so we're a multinational organization, and I think like most multinationals, we do have a number of notified bodies, and for sure we see differences. You know, I think Graham and Royt, you know, outlined very well the reasons for some of them. So to my mind, really the success, the strength, the cohesiveness of the regulatory framework as a whole kind of moving forward may well be determined by having some kind of overarching governance structure. You know, it's about, I think, strengthening the existing framework, you know, enhancing and improving what's working well, and critically assessing and rethinking what doesn't, like, you know, those things that are playing into this, you know, unlevel playing field. And I think I really like the idea of this kind of harmonization through centralization. So being able to make system level decisions, ensuring, you know, consistency, as the notified bodies have been talking about, consistency on decisions, consistency on interpretations of MDCG documents, you know, development of guidance, you know, derogations at an EU level, for example. So it's the centralized system is incredibly important. And, you know, in terms of, you know, primary roles for it, you know, I think being able to represent Europe, not just in Europe, but on a global stage is incredibly important. So looking at things like the IMGRF, the International Medical Device Regulators Forum, you know, I was in Washington last week, and we're seeing instances where we have all of these other, you know, major jurisdictions presenting specialized pathways for innovative devices or for orphan devices, pediatric devices, etc. And currently, you know, Europe doesn't have access to specialized pathways. So if we had this centralized governance system, things like access, decisions on access to these specialized pathways could be something that they could do. But again, then we would see the actual CE marking of the devices remaining with the notified bodies. So I think it's incredibly important, but I know Petra has an awful lot to say in this space as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear. Really, you're all behind the concept of central governance now, and I realise this is something that MedTech Europe is now pushing for. So, Petra, what kind of reception are you getting? Besides, you know, obviously here we've got representatives from industry and from notified bodies. Basel arguably spans both fields, and you know, a lot of communication with all stakeholders. Is this music to your ears? Do you feel that there is a growing impetus now to bring about the change that you at MedTech Insight would like?
Yes. So we at MedTech Europe, as you know, we published our vision towards the end of last year, calling for comprehensive reform to make the system more efficient, to support innovation, and also to improve the governance. And I think improving the governance part of the system is essential to make sure the system is efficient and also supports innovation. And yes, this is music to my ears. I think there's a couple of things I would say that we still need to have a lot of discussions, I think, with all stakeholders, including authorities, as to what they would like to see in terms of improving the governance system. Certainly from our side, I think there are a couple of principles that need to be discussed and where we need to see this consensus. One of the key principles that I think is essential is that a central structure has the mandate to be and is accountable for making sure that devices that meet their safety and performance claims reach patients and healthcare systems. I think it's absolutely essential, and no one part of today's governance system has that mandate. I think it's also essential that the governance structure is empowered to take system-level decisions and be able to course correct when issues come up like we're seeing in today's system. And thirdly, I think the governance system needs to be specific to MedTech. We have a very vibrant, a very diverse sector here with thousands, hundreds of thousands of technologies, which needs a dedicated, agile governance structure in place to be able to oversee the whole system, understand where things are working well, and let those proceed, and also be able to come in where there are issues. And as Olga was saying, I think that kind of structure, which has the overview, can also play the role of saying, okay, these specific devices should be able to access specific innovation pathways, for example, for breakthrough innovations for unmet needs to ensure that they get to patients in healthcare systems. There could also be a role for that. There should also be a role for that structure to play in overseeing the notified body system, and an ombudsman could also be part of the structure to allow all actors, whether it's industry or notified bodies, to appeal decisions taken by authorities. There's lots of roles here that I think should be part of the structure, and that maybe haven't been discussed yet. I mean, another area could be all of the EU legislation coming down that we see arriving rapidly in other areas to support, for example, the twin revolution in the digital area and the green area. The structure could also play a role in ensuring coherence between EU legislation when it comes down and is going to impact on our products. So lots and lots of different roles, I think, that could be part of a single central structure and which should be considered. And I think a lot of discussions need to still take place with authorities, with all stakeholders to understand, okay, where is the consensus and where does everyone see the structure being?
Right. Thank you for that, Petra. Could I just inquire a little more and start with you about what form would the agency take? Who would run it? Where would it be based? How many people might it employ, do you think? And how soon could such an agency be up and running? So that's a lot of questions. But just, have you thought about what exactly it might be, and also maybe how it would relate to the EMA?
Lots and lots of questions there, Amanda.
Yes.
Am I going first? I guess I'm going first. So I think, first of all, we're really not wedded to the word agency. And I think, and so we've been calling for a structure, and we don't have a fixed idea of what the format should be. And so I think it's important, first of all, as I was saying, that everyone agrees on what should the roles of the structure be, what should the principles be to drive those roles. And then I think the authorities, the European Commission, our member state authorities also need to get together and figure out, okay, what would that then look like? Does it need to be an agency? Does it need to be some other form of structure? I mean, when it comes to EMA, I don't know that we need an EMA-like structure. We don't need a structure, for example, that gives authorization to medical devices or does certification. That's already the role of the notified body system. And I think we need to maintain the notified body system in order to assess the vast diversity of technologies that we have today on the European market. So I think that wouldn't change. In terms of when and how many people, I don't have the answers to that. But certainly I think the fact that the European Commission has started their targeted evaluation to end at the end of next year, I don't think they will be able, probably, well, there's political will, there could be a way, but I would expect probably there wouldn't be a proposal put on paper and out for consideration until at the very earliest 2026. So I think we're looking at some time after that to realize the improvements in our governance system.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Petra. And yes, a lot of questions. Reut, I don't know, do you want a reminder of what the questions were there? I was just wondering about, you know, how notified bodies would imagine such an agency working, especially from the point of view of notified bodies. Yes.
Yeah, as I stated before, I mean, if it serves the purpose of more consistency, more predictability, anything is welcome. Realistically, I think we need to leverage on the existing structures and the existing expertise with the system. I think it's not realistic to imagine to build a new agency with completely new people. I think we need to somehow use what is already available in terms of expertise, technical. Most of the technical expertise is luckily with the notified bodies, so that's anyway there. But then also from the regulatory point of view and from the governance point of view. And there, I think we will need the member states and we will need the contribution of the member states. That will be essential. Otherwise, it just takes too long to build something like that.
Yes, a good point. So nobody seems to be questioning the notified body system within a different sort of structure, governance structure in the EU. But Graham, how would you, or what sort of role would you like to see notified bodies have in such a governance structure? And, you know, how would notified bodies feed into that structure?
Well, so we see ourselves as a integral part of the regulatory system, and as Roy said, you know, we harbour the vast amount of technical expertise that there is. If we go back to what are the issues hitting us now, and I think it was Olga that mentioned it, you know, kind of innovation is departing and so on. Then I think notified bodies are very, very keen to have a dialogue, and this isn't just in the context of the future government, it's in the short term as well, because this isn't something we can just push down the road for 24, 36, 48 months down the line. We need to be talking about it now. So notified bodies are really keen to start to get involved and say, right, how can we play a role in supporting innovation? How can we play a role in the kind of dialogue that manufacturers want in an early stage that steps away from the notion that it's anything that looks like consultation or anything that is giving manufacturers a leg up, but gives them a meaningful dialogue and insight into requirements, and that, you know, we often hear about predictability and timescales, and one of the things that we can do is do that. So I think that's an example, Amanda, of the sort of thing we'd like to be involved in more of, albeit let's not wait for a governance structure. I think that my caution would be, it's a really important conversation we're having, but let's not push everything down the road. There are some things that we can be doing in the short term as well.
Well, that's interesting to hear. And Olga, if there were to be such an agency and you would have the accountability of, well, the competent authorities would be working within that structure and the notified bodies as well. Would you perceive that as being a lot more straightforward in terms of companies and how they relate to these different structures?
I would like to think so, but I guess it depends on what the final structure will be. You know, I'd probably reiterate a little bit what Petra was saying, that agency is just one option. You know, I think that's like kind of asking for the job title before you know what the job requirements entail. So I think it's incredibly important that we're not too prescriptive until we understand all of the perspectives. You know, we really need to have agreement and, you know, alignment on the what, you know, what we need the governance structure to do before we can move on to the how would we get there. But what I would really love to see, Amanda, is some, you know, thinking outside of the box. Like, I think that we can learn and consider aspects from other sectors. Like when you look at aviation, you know, they've got global alignment. They look at things like mutual recognition. They have a board of appeal, you know, but again, but that's a huge, you know, a huge agency. But, you know, you could just take some lessons from that and have maybe a smaller, more agile structure, right? Because we're not recommending that it will be doing certification. Or, you know, in the case of automotive, they also contribute to global standards. You know, and we would love to, you know, for the governance structure to be more involved in IMDRF and global harmonization conversions. Things like MDSAP, for example, would be incredibly beneficial. But I think the most important thing is that it's fit for purpose for our sector, right? It needs to be specific to our sector. And, you know, most importantly, you know, to allow access for European patients, you know, to the devices. The last thing we want to do here is to create more unintended consequences. So I think ideally we'd like to shape the structure with existing authorizations, you know, and approvals in mind, you know, kind of the path of least disruption, if you like, would be ideal.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting that you talk about the role of such a structure with regard, well, in the international scene as well. And perhaps such a structure would have more of an identity at the moment where things seem a bit fragmented, perhaps within Europe. We have already talked about how, to a certain degree, how such a governance structure could better serve in innovation than the current regulatory structure, which, as we all know, really has a lot of problems and has put a lot of obstacles in the way of innovation. And Graham, you talked about starting to do more now, not waiting until we have such a structure. But what do you think can be done in the lead up to waiting for the Commission's targeted evaluation? What can be done to improve the chances for innovation for our, you know, patients in Europe to have access to these innovative products earlier than is currently happening, with so many companies taking their products, their innovative products abroad first? So, Royt, would you like to start?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, because currently we still see a mix of challenges we have because of the transition of MDD to MDR and the requirements. So I think what we need to focus on to move ahead is the underlying requirements. What are the requirements we expect to be fulfilled for innovative devices, and how would that be different from a non-innovative device? That needs a very clear framework to work with, yeah, because that's the essence. The pipeline problem that we had in the transition, that's kind of over. Yeah, the notified bodies have capacity, they can work on innovative things. But if the requirements, specifically the requirements for clinical data, are a substantial burden to bring that to the market, then we need a very good definition of how long and in what way we can deviate from the expectations to a let's say normal device or non-innovative device on the market. And that is where the discussion needs to go.
Right. What would your reaction be to that, Basil, especially because you must see a lot of frustration among your clients who, you know, are trying to get their innovative devices through the system in Europe?
Amanda, actually, I can echo what Roy was saying, but let me add something. We have already the infrastructure in the MDR. We have it. The problem that we don't have is the empowerment of the notified bodies. They are not empowered to take decisions. And today, majority of notified bodies are acting in fear of doing something wrong, impacting their designation. In the past, and even under the directive, I think everyone can remember that, we were able to set conditions. We were doing also limited certification. We were putting conditions on post-market clinical follow-up for manufacturers if they have devices with limited data or devices for special patient population. And the problem that we see today that everyone is reading black on white, and like Roy was mentioning, it is actually expected to read black on white. So you have conversation not just regarding to innovative devices, even for legacy old devices that they are expecting from you to collect data forever. And this is not just a notified body, this is the expectation on the notified body. And I think if you give them the empowerment and you tell them you are allowed and we will not challenge you every time when you do it, then they are not scared. Because today, every time when a notified body take a borderline decision, you see an authority looking to that in a strange way and warning them. And I have been in such meeting with the authorities, and you can believe me, this is why I'm not a big fan of member state being involved, to be honest. I'm much more a fan of having a central agency with technical expert, clinical expert who understand the necessity for devices for the European market toward the patient. I'm not looking on setting expectations which are administrative and not adding value to the patient. So 80% of the questions that you get today are administrative form. 20% are related to benefit risk profile of a device. And this is driven by an administrative system that was set by the push of authorities that they justify it to be just connected to the push of the European Commission on them to implement the MDR. And I think we need to get rid of that. Then we can get the solution for the future for having innovation getting back to Europe earlier without having a burden like we have today.
That's very interesting. Petra, I would be interested to hear your reaction to both what Basil said and also to what Roit said about notified bodies having capacity and they can work on innovative products. Is that the experience of your members?
Well, I think, first of all, the vast majority of our direct members have either fully certified or on their way to the certification journey. So I think with regards to our direct members, you know, many of them have been preparing for the transition for years and are now well on their way or have arrived at certification. So I think there's been a lot of learning curve, both from manufacturers and from notified bodies along the way. I think where a lot of the heat is right now is on the wider sector, especially the small and medium-sized enterprises, which are out there. And we don't know how many there are, but certainly there are many, many SME manufacturers out there. And I think for them, the system is more burdensome in the way that if they don't have the manpower, for example, or employee power to resource all of the requirements or to follow the conformity assessment in the same way as larger companies do, that of course, that those resource constraints that we're hearing about from SMEs in particular can be quite a big concern for them and can also lead to discussions about whether to maintain devices or discontinue. So I think there's a lot of pressure right now, especially on the SME side of the sector. But for all manufacturers, you know, we're considering how to proceed not only pre-market but also post-market. There are also many questions post-market, how to proceed and how to meet the requirements, what the procedure should be, what the templates should look like, how to design the system so that we can keep up with a very dynamic information management flow, which is required under the regulations. So I think it's a mixed picture, I would say, in other words, Amanda, and it really depends on how well prepared, how well resourced, both in terms of employees and also financing, a company is to meet the requirements of the system And I think from a notify body perspective, I would imagine it's the same there as well. We know that for notify bodies, they are working extremely hard to process, to receive applications and process them. Not all companies we hear are getting in to have a notify body, and not all codes can be worked on at the same time. So I think there are still challenges, but it may be up to the individual notify body as to where those challenges do lie. And maybe just the last word, I think there's still a lot of experience that can be converted now into making sure, or to improving on the timelines for certification, to speaking pre-market here, to improve the timelines on the certification, to really say, okay, now we have the experience on the notify body side, can we give you a realistic picture? How long is it going to take? And how much is it going to cost for the total procedure from A to Z? So I think now that's where we need to be moving, is total transparency in terms of the time for the procedures and also the cost. Both I talked about certification, but that equally applies also post-market.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you for really giving the bigger picture there and looking at what it's like too for SMEs. Olga, in your experience when it comes to innovation, would Boston Scientific, does it launch most of its innovative products here in the EU, or are you more inclined to go to the US or other markets?
I'd say we're in line, Amanda, with the trends we're seeing at an industry level, to be quite honest. I think the MedTech Europe survey had something like 50% of manufacturers were going, you know, to the US or other markets first. And just I think it's interesting, you know, touching on the SME part, you know, we hear all these tales that honestly, like that they can't even get financing if they say they're going to come to Europe first, because it's too slow, too costly, too unpredictable, and that they're really being urged to go to other markets first, or they won't get financing. And you know, we also see the US FDA, you know, I think at AdvaMed last year, they were saying that 62% of new innovative products were going in first or in parallel to the US. And, you know, yes, we do have some of our products going first to the US, and things that could happen now, like, for example, you know, well-resourced platforms for early dialogue so that you can really understand the evidence expectations would help those devices come to the EU first, or adopting things like, you know, real-world evidence. So, for example, we had one of our devices go to the US first to get the clinical evidence, you know, and then to come to Europe. And it's certainly a pattern that I think as an industry we would like to change. We want to ensure that Europe, you know, regains its position as a world leader, you know, as that market, that gold standard that other jurisdictions rely on, and really uses that springboard then for access to other markets globally, right? And, you know, most importantly, if that's the case, it's European patients then that have first access to these devices. You know, when we look around the world, there are other markets where historically they had very burdensome systems, and their patients waited maybe 5 or 7 years later to get these innovative products. And we're seeing a complete reversal of that now, where they've streamlined their processes, they have specialized pathways, they've made it more efficient, and they're aggressively going after getting the innovations to their market. And Europe is losing out. And European patients, most importantly, are losing out on access to those devices. You know, and I think it's really important to understand that, you know, we are all patients. You know, as I think Petra said earlier, like there's something like 500,000 different types of medical technologies on the European market. And they're everything from plasters to pacemakers, you know, so we are all patients. Your sister, your brother, your mother, your cousin, we are all patients. And I, for one, want access to the latest technologies. And not just that, but to ensure that the existing technologies remain on the market as well, right? Also, so very important.
Yeah, some great points there. Graham and Roy, to Graham first, thinking about the challenges for innovative products at the moment in the EU, if so many products are going away from the EU at this early stage, then does this mean that notified bodies aren't having the kind of experiences and training, you're not able to train your staff so much on those innovative products? What's the impact on the notified bodies themselves and future business possibilities?
So I wouldn't say that's something that we're particularly seeing in terms of, you know, we see a huge diversity of products, and the way in which the legislation works and the requirements on us mean that we have to have a real breadth of expertise to be able to do the certification that we need to. In any one product that we see, there's a whole range of stuff that we're looking at, from biocompatibility to sterilization through to clinical. And I think what's quite interesting is that clinical is the thing that's come up in everything that everyone has said. That's the area. When people come up and talk to me when I go to conferences, they're not talking to me about, you know, electrical safety testing issues. They talk to me about the clinical issues. So that, I think that's the area where we can focus on. Something that I think is sometimes to some extent forgotten is that some of the mechanisms in the MDR aren't being used. So common specifications is a good example. They were put in the MDR very much in mind to be able to unlock and provide consistency and harmonisation that Basil in particular has spoken very well about. So I think that it is a problem. It is clearly a problem. There's lots of evidence out there, and it's evidence across the piece that innovation is moving away. We do need to address the balance, but I think as Roy has said, I think notified bodies are in a position to do that. We do need to be able to improve our timeliness. We need to bring those timescales down. We need to be more transparent about costs and fees. There are lots of things that we can do to help, so that when innovators want to come to Europe, they've got that much greater predictability. I think one more comment on innovation, and probably the big challenge that Europe has, is that Europe is a very diverse collection of healthcare systems. And when you're talking about innovation, what's innovation in one country and what's useful innovation in one country could actually look very, very different depending on which country it's in. So it's very hard for a notified body, which is acting on a transnational basis, to be able to necessarily dial up or down clinical evidence requirements in a way that fits every single scenario in every single healthcare system in the UK. So there is definitely a role for national authorities here. I saw it when I was, you know, with my old hat on, when I was at the MHRA. I was very clear that it was a responsibility of the authority to be able to, you know, I think there's a world in which authorities can work much more closely with notified bodies to identify what is useful innovation, how can authorities work with notified bodies to support that. Just pre-market, but also in particular the post-market requirements that Petra spoke about.
Right, and also in theory, a new governance structure could be the mechanism through which that's done. What do you think, Roy?
Yeah, so I think I understood your question. If notified bodies will be able to evaluate innovation, even though it's not coming to Europe, and for sure we are. The way we build expertise is anyway that we need to have experts working on that with significant and relevant industry experience. Yeah, so, and obviously these people are existing out there. That's where we need to look at. Second source of expertise is, of course, product testing. We do that anyway for all kinds of markets. So that's another element for competency building. And then it is also not the case that there is no innovation at all. Some of the innovation might not be like the breakthrough innovation that needs a separate path and would change the complete application of, or would open up completely new applications. A lot of innovation is a stepwise process, and we need to adopt that. Latest example is obviously artificial intelligence. Well, if you look at imaging devices, artificial intelligence is used for years already. Yeah, so it's not like we've never been exposed to that, and we know how to adopt it. So the expertise building is not the biggest challenge here. And I think what Graham explained about the diversity of the healthcare systems, that is a challenge also for innovation, because that is a multitude of different business cases for the manufacturer. And obviously, it's much easier to go with a large market with a kind of uniform business case for a product launch, instead of having all these very specific different reimbursement systems and price levels or whatever the market conditions are. Yeah, so I think that there is more than just the technical or regulatory part that we have to consider when we look at how do we bring innovation to Europe or back to Europe, depending on what it is.
Yes, that starts to open a much bigger discussion when we get into talk about reimbursement as well. And that's, of course, a huge part of the complexity of the European system. Moving back to sort of focusing more concretely on a new potential governance system. Petra, I'd like to ask you what you think would be needed as building blocks in terms of talks, decision making, and importantly, legal steps and instruments to create such a structure.
Huh. Well, I'm not sure I've got all the answers to that one, yeah. Amanda. Maybe someone else on this call does, but maybe just a couple of words here. So first of all, so we published our vision. So we've come out with where we think Europe needs to be in terms of an improved governance system, and I'm sure that we don't have all the answers. And so I think it's the first building block has got to be discussion. It's got to be to have discussion with the authorities, with all stakeholders, like we're doing today, for example. And by the way, this podcast I think is one of the very first, if not the first, public discussion that we're having on the governance system. So I think we need more of these kinds of discussions to understand where everyone thinks the governance system should be and what the building blocks need to be. And I think it's a very positive sign that, as others were saying, that the Commission has or is undertaking a study on governance and innovation at the moment that will run until the third quarter of this year. And then they're going to pick up with a targeted evaluation of the IVD regulation and medical devices regulation until the end of next year. So I think, you know, all of this is going to be a big assessment, I think, and I hope will lead to legislative proposals being made by the Commission, maybe as early as 2026, one would hope. So I think there's still a long road ahead in terms of discussion. And as someone was saying, was it you, Graham? I think we need to start that discussion sooner rather than later, because it is quite a complex undertaking. There are a lot of considerations here. And before we can answer the kinds of questions that you're posing here, Amanda, which are exactly, you know, what shape should a central structure take? How many people should it employ? Who should pay for the system? I think there's a lot of questions, a lot of considerations there, which should, of course, I think, flow from understanding what should the roles be, what should the principles be for setting up such a system.
Great. That's really interesting background. And I can see these things take time, of course, to evolve. And there's going to be a lot of discussion ahead. Basil, would you like to give your views on what might be needed? Because I know this is something that's been in your mind for quite a few years, maybe.
Yeah, so Amanda, I think, I mean, listening to all of that, and if we want to get an immediate measure, which is helping us in the upcoming months and years, we need to use what we have. Where is the competence? The competence is with the notified bodies. It's not with the authorities. It's not with the commission. I'm talking about technical competence. So if we're creating an agency who is the coordinating manager for actually being in a system in the future much more predictable, then we need to use the competence which we authorize as notified bodies to be able to certify devices to create the transparency for the future, to create the kind of information to be shared with manufacturers that they get with their innovation to the market, because they need to have a predictable system. So they need to know the expectation. The other point, which is important, I think there should be a use of the structured dialogue was mentioned multiple times, but the structured dialogue shall be also a result which is shared publicly in a way which is enabling manufacturer to know and learn from each other, and not to talk about like confidential details, but to share details which are helpful for the future, because notified bodies are currently, you know, I'm sitting today here and tomorrow in an ISO committee. Who are the ISO committees? Those are manufacturer experts. Those are subject matter experts from authorities, from notified bodies, sit together, create a standard. And this has to happen for also European legislation for all kinds of devices. And I know from my time at TÜV, and I know that BSI, I know that DEKRA and other notified bodies, they have their own testing protocols. They have to be harmonized away, and that agency could help us to have a harmonized system in the future to enable the predictability, because predictability is just connected with knowing what I am expecting to deliver. Today, you deliver a box and you do not know what you're going to expect as questions. You go to BSI, you go to TÜV, you go to DEKRA, and I'm not blaming any notified body. It's just actually how they were designated, that they have to fulfill these rules depending on who is influencing them. And we need to have that. So I think this is very important. The other important part is also that notified bodies have an ability to have a structured dialogue with that agency, that they talk with them about limitation, about problems, about situation where they need their help, their guidance to say, how can we manage that situation? We have a device which has perhaps 10 patient data, but it is for a specific patient population. We are willing to give them a conditional approval, give us the blessing that they are not blamed afterwards. So they need to have something which is enabling them to take that decision without being the bad boys afterwards, because they took a decision in the interest of the healthcare system. And if something goes wrong, then they are liable and responsible and they are blamed in front of everyone. This is what we need in the European system, in an agency. We need more patient-oriented system. And like Petra mentioned, we need a system which is having as a target ensuring continuity of the healthcare system and having devices on the market on time. This is important because currently is like I have the feeling that the expectation is to raise as much as possible questions instead of ensuring that the devices are coming on time. And this is where the authority mentality should change toward helping notified bodies being more pragmatic and reasonable, going back to what is actually necessary for the patient.
Thank you for that, Basil. It just makes me realise what a huge topic this is and how much discussion that we've got ahead of us. And I'd love to carry on for hours, but we must wrap up now. But before we do, I'd just like to ask each of you, is it a yes from you in terms of needing a new regulatory structure in the EU as soon as possible? Olga?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have a golden opportunity here and I think we really need to get it right. So it's a yes.
Right. Thank you. Right.
It's a, let's say, cautious yes, because it's more than that. We shouldn't think that that is the silver bullet that will do it. It is one of the elements that can support that. But there are other things we definitely have to do.
Right, great. Basil, very briefly.
Graham or Basil now?
Basil.
Okay, so from my point of view, I think yes, but as Reut mentioned, we need to look to the holistic picture. It's much more than just one piece of it. And the holistic picture would need to avoid what happened in the past years, because we kept changing things without actually looking to a long-term impact.
Lovely. Thank you. Graham?
So I'll be a little more cautious and I'll sit firmly on the fence. I think to Basil's point, we shouldn't underestimate the positive impact that stability has on a system to be able to allow things to happen in a way that we're not dealing with a mad transition. We're not dealing with stability is something that allows a lot to happen in quite a productive way. So I think the other risk is that in terms of the implementability of a central structure, there is an awful lot that needs to be done in terms of sorting out the big politics, dealing with some very complex negotiations around how CE legislation operates and so on. So I would caution against us getting tied up in knots trying to do this and not dealing with the issues that we can do and we can fix it in the system as it currently exists.
Some interesting words of caution there. And Petra?
So I would go with a yes, but, because the question is, do we want a new structure ASAP? I would say we don't want a new structure. We want an improved structure.
Yeah.
And also ASAP, I don't think we can do it ASAP. I think it's a complex undertaking. We need to do it, but we need to do it right. So I think we need to make sure that we have a quality governance system put into place, an improved governance system put into place which does everything that we want it to do, and that will take time to achieve. We shouldn't linger for years and years and years on it, obviously. It would be great to have it not too much further than 2026 if possible, or 2027, but we need to make sure that it's done right. So a cautious yes, but from my side.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you to each one of you for this very lively discussion. It's a fascinating topic. And as I said, you know, it's one that's going to be, we're going to be watching over the next few years. It's clear this it will be crucial in the reshaping of the future of regulating medical devices in the EU. And I'm sure this is a topic that will be hitting our headlines frequently this year and beyond. I'm looking forward to engaging with experts again on this topic and to contributing to offer unique insights of this kind to our readership. So it's time for me to close this podcast now, but looking forward to the next one. And thank you all again.
Thanks so much, Amanda.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.